You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is a Thursday edition, and I just want to remind you there will not be a show tomorrow. We're in summer hours, a short week. So today I will have a little preview of what's coming up, namely the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany that starts tomorrow. And ideally, I would have covered it Friday, so it'll be Monday before I actually broadcast the results of the summit. And the way it works is there are 20 countries. They represent about a little over 60%, between 60 and 66% of the output of the world in terms of the economies. And the members, there are 19 countries plus the European Union. And the biggies are there: China, United States, Australia, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Canada, France, Germany, United Kingdom, and several others. And Saudi Arabia will be there as well, South Africa. And initially, it was not the leaders of the country that met, but rather the Treasury Secretary, or in many countries they call it the Finance Minister, would meet. And it was primarily focused on economic matters. I think broadened to now the presidents, or the chancellors in the case of Germany. And Germany is the reason why Hamburg, Germany was chosen, is Germany, Merkel, Chancellor Merkel, is the president of this summit. There's no organization behind it, and they rotate this every year, so it's a different location. In the United States, I think it was 2008, where President Bush chaired the first, or was president of the first G20 summit. So it's important, and it's the opportunity for a number of world leaders to meet and discuss what's on their mind and what I think will be on the agenda. And I'll cover this later because I really want to cover President Trump's speech. North Korea is definitely going to be an issue discussed at the G20. This poses a threat to trade as well as peace in Asia. And the only power, well, actually, I think there are two, but the primary power that I think can control North Korea is Communist China. And what I proposed yesterday, because I've looked at the options, sanctions typically don't work, or they take too long to work. The military options, none of them are good. Now, a lot of people throw that out, but as far as I'm concerned, it's talk, because if you actually look at the situation, you quickly conclude either conventional war or nuclear war is not the way to go, because millions of people would die, and I don't think Japan or South Korea wants to see, especially South Korea, Seoul leveled by artillery and rockets from North Korea. So I think inevitably you have to narrow the options down, and what would be the one thing that would make China respond. And an embargo into the United States of all their exports. Now, you don't immediately jump to that, and you certainly don't do this in public, but it has to be made clear that the United States, as well as Japan, South Korea, Australia, and countries in the immediate vicinity, do not want a nuclear North Korea. We don't want nuclear proliferation. Because if North Korea develops a nuclear weapon, then I believe South Korea will do it as well as Japan. And that's exactly what we don't want. So you have to make it very clear that if Communist China keeps supporting North Korea, they can control them. And it's major. North Korea has virtually nothing to export. Coal, but most of its coal today is exported to China. It's major. North Korea's major trading partner, over 80% of the trade comes from and with China. So you need to get their attention. And it would have a dramatic impact. And the United States should get the European Union on board. So this is a meeting where alternatives like this need to be discussed. And the two players that influence North Korea is primarily China, but also Russia. And they're going to be at the meeting. Now, whether or not this will be broached or anything will be broached. It's clear that this is on the mind of the President Trump, people in his administration, and it will be arranged, talked about at this summit, as well as trade and other matters. Now, I'll get back to what will be discussed in a little bit more detail. This is my second story. The fact that world leaders are arriving or have arrived already in Hamburg for the G20 summit and the key issues that will be discussed. Today, Donald Trump, President Trump, gave a speech in Krasinski Square, Warsaw, Poland. It was, I think, a historic speech, although it's not getting as much attention as it deserves from big live media, your television networks and the papers, but it was a very much historic speech to an appreciative audience, and several times they broke out chanting Trump, 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 USA, USA, USA. So it was generally a friendly crowd, not surprisingly. And what I wanted to do, given that the coverage of this speech has not been what I would have expected, this rivals, I think, some have even said, is better in certain respects to Ronald Reagan's speech in Berlin when he said, tear down this wall. So what I wanted to do is I'll play the speech and I'll interrupt it to give you my comments. I might not have time really to do the entire speech, but I wanted you to have the opportunity to hear long passages of it and then present my commentary and opinions on it. I thought it was a well-written speech. I've both listened to it as well as read the text. So let's start.
Thank you very much. That's so nice. The United States has many great diplomats, but there is truly no better ambassador for our country than our beautiful First Lady, Melania. Thank you, Melania. That was very nice.
She introduced the president.
We've come to your nation to deliver a very important message. America loves Poland, and America loves the Polish people. Thank you. The Poles have not only greatly enriched this region, but Polish Americans have also greatly enriched the United States, and I was truly proud to have their support in the 2016 election. It is a profound honor to stand in this city by this monument to the Warsaw Uprising and to address the Polish nation that so many generations have dreamed of, a Poland that is safe, strong, and free. President Duda and your wonderful First Lady, Agata, have welcomed us with the tremendous warmth and kindness for which Poland is known around the world. Thank you. I sincerely thank both of them and to Prime Minister Szydło a very special thanks also. We are pleased that former President Lech Walesa, so famous for leading the Solidarity Movement, has joined us today also. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. On behalf of all Americans, let me also thank the entire Polish people for the generosity you have shown in welcoming our soldiers to your country. These soldiers are not only brave defenders of freedom, but also symbols of America's commitment to your security and your place in a strong and democratic Europe. We are proudly joined on stage by American, Polish, British, and Romanian soldiers. Thank you. Thank you. Great job. President Duda and I have just come from an incredibly successful meeting with the leaders participating in the Three Seas Initiative. To the citizens of this great region, America is eager to expand our partnership with you. We welcome stronger ties of trade and commerce as you grow your economies, and we are committed to securing your access to alternate sources of energy so Poland and its neighbors are never again held hostage to a single supplier of energy.
Let me interrupt there. What is he talking about? Europe, especially Germany, but also Poland, gets its natural gas from Russia. This is the first time I'm aware where he's, well, I take that back. I am aware of another time. President Trump is making it known that the United States, because we do have an excess supply of natural gas, now you need to ship it. And I'm not going to get into the logistics of that, but that involves some heavy investment. But we could be an alternative supply to Europe and Poland in particular, providing its energy resources, primarily natural gas, but we also will be exporting a lot of gasoline. Why? Because our independent oil companies use fracking as well as directional drilling and discovered huge is not even the right word. Humongous, gigantic reserves of natural gas as well as oil, and gives us a supply for several hundred years. And now we'll start to be increasingly an exporter of energy. And one country that needs that energy is Poland, but so does Germany. Now, realistically, that's going to take time. And Russia has a key advantage because they're obviously closer and there's a pipeline in place. But you need to know that. And Russia is the threat to Europe. And NATO today has 28 members. And there are several other countries. Ukraine is one of them that would like to be a member of NATO. Now, why? And I think President Trump's going to get into this in a minute. There's an Article 5 in the agreement in the formation of NATO that an attack against one country is an attack against all countries. I think the main reason we have not had another war in Europe is the fact that the alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, has grown. The problem has been, though, these nations committed to spend at least 2% of their real gross domestic product on military spending, and many of the nations have not done that. And President Trump is putting them on notice. He expects them to at least meet the minimum. And the minimum, quite frankly, isn't enough. What's going on here is countries like Germany, France, are not living up to their commitments. They're spending their money on their citizens, primarily in the welfare area. It's very much a welfare state there. So let's continue with President Trump.
Mr. President, I congratulate you along with the President of Croatia on your leadership of this historic Three Seas Initiative. Thank you. This is my first visit to Central Europe as President, and I am thrilled that it could be right here at this magnificent, beautiful piece of land It is beautiful. Poland is the geographic heart of Europe, but more importantly, in the Polish people, we see the soul of Europe. Your nation is great because your spirit is great and your spirit is strong. For two centuries, Poland suffered constant and brutal attacks. But while Poland could be invaded and occupied and its borders even erased from the map, it could never be erased from history or from your hearts. In those dark days, you have lost your land, but you never lost your pride. So it is with this true admiration that I can say today that from the farms and villages of your countryside to the cathedrals and squares of your great cities, Poland lives, Poland prospers, and Poland prevails. Despite every effort to transform you, oppress you, or destroy you, you endured and overcame. You are the proud nation of Copernicus. Think of that. Chopin, St. John Paul II, Poland is a land of great heroes.
One thing I would emphasize, and President Trump pointed this out, Poland was invaded by Nazi Germany, National Socialist Germany, as well as the Soviet Union, and was occupied. They have lived under totalitarian regimes. After World War II, the communists, Poland was part of the so-called Warsaw Pact nations. Those were nations where the Soviet Union occupied them. Instead of giving freedom to the country, they put their boots on the necks of the people there. And it's not just Poland. But Poland has, and the people of Poland have, and know what a totalitarian regimes are, whether it was Nazi Germany or the communist of the Soviet Union.
And you are a people who know the true value of what you defend. The triumph of the Polish spirit over centuries of hardship gives us all hope for a future in which good conquers evil and peace achieves victory over war. For Americans, Poland has been a symbol of hope since the beginning of our nation. Polish heroes and American patriots fought side by side in our War of Independence, and in many wars that followed. Our soldiers still serve together today in Afghanistan and Iraq, combating the enemies of all civilization. For America's part, we have never given up on freedom and independence as the right and destiny of the Polish people, and we never, ever will. Our two countries share a special bond forged by unique histories and national characters. It's a fellowship that exists only among people who have fought and bled and died for freedom. The signs of this friendship stand in our nation's capital. Just steps from the White House, we've raised statues of men with names like Pulaski and Kosciuszko. The same is true in Warsaw, where street signs carry the name of George Washington and a monument stands to one of the world's greatest heroes, Ronald Reagan. And so I am here today not just to visit an old ally, but to hold it up as an example for others who seek freedom and who wish to summon the courage and the will to defend our civilization. The story of Poland is the story of a people who have never lost hope, who have never been broken, and who have never, ever forgotten who they are. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. Such a great honor. This is a nation more than 1,000 years old. Your borders were erased for more than a century and only restored just one century ago. In 1920, in the miracle of Wisła, Poland stopped the Soviet army bent on European conquest. Then, 19 years later, in 1939, you were invaded yet again, this time by Nazi Germany from the West and the Soviet Union from the East. That's trouble. That's tough. Under a double occupation, the Polish people endured evils beyond description. The Katyn Forest Massacre, the occupations, the Holocaust, the Warsaw Ghetto, and the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, the destruction of this beautiful capital city, and the deaths of nearly 1 in 5 Polish people. A vibrant Jewish population, the largest in Europe, was reduced to almost nothing after the Nazis systematically murdered millions of Poland's Jewish citizens, along with countless others during that brutal occupation. In the summer of 1944, the Nazi and Soviet armies were preparing for a terrible and bloody battle right here in Warsaw. Amid that hell on earth, the citizens of Poland rose up to defend their homeland. I am deeply honored to be joined on stage today by veterans and heroes of the Warsaw Uprising. What great spirit. We salute your noble sacrifice, and we pledge to always remember your fight for Poland and for freedom. Thank you. Thank you. This monument reminds us that more than 150,000 Poles died during that desperate struggle to overthrow oppression. From the other side of the river, the Soviet armed forces stopped and waited. They watched as the Nazis ruthlessly destroyed the city, viciously murdering men, women, and children. They tried to destroy this nation forever by shattering its will to survive. But there is a courage and a strength deep in the Polish character that no one could destroy. The Polish martyr, Bishop Michael Kozel, said it well, more horrifying than a defeat of arms is a collapse of the human spirit. Through 4 decades of communist rule, Poland and the other captive nations of Europe endured a brutal campaign to demolish freedom, your faith, your laws, your history, your identity, indeed the very essence of your culture and your humanity. Yet through it all, you never lost that spirit. Your oppressors tried to break you, But Poland could not be broken. And when the day came on June 2nd, 1979, and 1 million Poles gathered around Victory Square for their very first mass with their Polish Pope, that day every communist in Warsaw must have known that their oppressive system would soon come crashing down. They must have known it at the exact moment during Pope John Paul II's sermon, when a million Polish men, women, and children suddenly raised their voices in a single prayer. A million Polish people did not ask for wealth. They did not ask for privilege. Instead, 1 million Poles sang three simple words: "We want God." In those words, the Polish people recalled the promise of a better future. They found new courage to face down their oppressors, and they found the words to declare that Poland would be Poland once again. As I stand here today before this incredible crowd, this faithful nation, we can still hear those voices that echo through history. Their message is as true today as ever. The people of Poland, the people of America, and the people of Europe still cry out, "We want God."
They do, but, and there's a big but here, church attendance in many countries in Europe is way down. Not in Poland, because it's a Catholic nation, but across Europe, more and more churches, the attendance at mass or services is significantly down. Its values, the value of freedom, the value to worship God, that makes many nations, the few that, I say many nations, really the few that really have that as a value, the great nations. You have to value your freedom, and that includes your freedom to worship according to your faith.
Together with Pope John Paul II, the Poles reasserted their identity as a nation devoted to God. And with that powerful declaration of who you are, you came to understand what to do and how to live. You stood in solidarity against oppression, against a lawless secret police, against a cruel and wicked system that impoverished your cities and your souls. And you won. Poland prevailed. Poland will always prevail.
They're chanting Donald Trump, USA.
Thank you. You were supported in that victory over communism by a strong alliance of free nations in the West that defied tyranny. Now among the most committed members of the NATO alliance, Poland has resumed its place as a leading nation of a Europe that is strong, whole, and free. A strong Poland is a blessing to the nations of Europe, and they know that. A strong Europe is a blessing to the West and to the world. One 100 years after the entry of American forces into World War I, the transatlantic bond between the United States and Europe is as strong as ever, and maybe in many ways even stronger. This continent no longer confronts the specter of communism. But today we're in the West, and we have to say there are dire threats to our security and to our way of life. You see what's happening out there. They are threats. We will confront them. We will win. but they are threats.
The biggest threat, actually there are two, is from Russia, and the other is mass migration of Muslims, refugees, fleeing both Africa and the Middle East, many of them that are radical Islamic terrorists.
We are confronted by another oppressive ideology, one that seeks to export terrorism and extremism all around the globe. America and Europe have suffered one terror attack after another. We're going to get it to stop. During a historic gathering in Saudi Arabia, I called on the leaders of more than 50 Muslim nations to join together to drive out this menace which threatens all of humanity. We must stand united against these shared enemies to strip them of their territory and their funding and their networks and any form of ideological support that they may have. While we will always welcome new citizens who share our values and love our people, our borders will always be closed to terrorism and extremism of any kind. We are fighting hard against radical Islamic terrorism, and we will prevail. We cannot accept those who reject our values and who use hatred to justify violence against the innocent. Today, the West is also confronted by the powers that seek to test our will, undermine our confidence, and challenge our interests. To meet new forms of aggression, including propaganda, financial crimes, and cyber warfare, we must adapt our alliance to compete effectively in new ways and on all new battlefields. We urge Russia to cease its destabilizing activities in Ukraine and elsewhere, and its support for hostile regimes, including Syria and Iran, and to instead join the community of responsible nations in our fight against common enemies and in defense of civilization itself.
Well, that's a very good goal, but Russia looks out for its national interest. And it needs a port in the Mediterranean, and that's why it's has been for decades a major supplier of weapons to Syria. And that's who they're allied with. And so is the Islamic Republic of Iran, the leading terrorist nation, sponsor of terrorism. So why we would welcome Russia, it takes two to tango. And the Russians are not going to change their ways. They needed the naval facilities in the Crimea, part of Ukraine, and invaded. They needed a naval port in Syria, so they maintain their alliance with the Assad regime. Yes, we do have a common enemy, namely the radical Islamic terrorist, and that's one of the challenges of the Russians. But recently, U.S. and Russian fighter planes have been engaging, not in combat yet, but approaching it, and that needs to be worked on. Because the last thing we need is either a U.S. pilot or a Russian pilot shooting down our aircraft.
Finally, on both sides of the Atlantic, our citizens are confronted by yet another danger, one firmly within our control. This danger is invisible to some, but familiar to the polls. The steady creep of government bureaucracy that drains the vitality and wealth of the people. The West became great not because of paperwork and regulations, but because people were allowed to chase their dreams and pursue their destinies. Americans, Poles, and nations of Europe value individual freedom and sovereignty. We must work together to confront forces, whether they come from inside or out, from the South or the East, that threaten over time to undermine these values and to erase the bonds of culture, faith, and tradition that make us who we are.
That sounds like very much the European Union. The United Kingdom, its people wanted to exit, and they have, and are in the process of exiting. And it's a call for nations to take an independent course. I think eventually the European Union is going to fail for the simple reason why you can unite economically. There's no real common influence that unites people of many nations. There's no common history, no common language, no common culture. And even the United States in the Civil War fought a Civil War. Why today we have the United States, we almost didn't. And that was largely over taxes and, to a lesser extent, slavery. Yes, the problem is, especially in Europe, they've bought into a welfare state mixed economy model, and that presents challenges to Germany, France, United Kingdom, and other countries that have a much greater percent of their government providing welfare to their citizens. And where you have that means less freedom, less control. And today we have to compete globally, yet contend, especially if in Europe, with the regulations promulgated in Brussels, the headquarters of the European Union.
If left unchecked, these forces will undermine our courage, sap our spirit, and weaken our will to defend ourselves and our societies. But just as our adversaries and enemies of the past learned here in Poland, we know that these forces, too, are doomed to fail if we want them to fail, and we do indeed want them to fail. They are doomed not only because our alliance is strong, our countries are resilient, and our power is unmatched. Through all of that, you have to say everything is true. Our adversaries, however, are doomed because we will never forget who we are. And if we don't forget who we are, we just can't be beaten. Americans will never forget. The nations of Europe will never forget. We are the fastest and the greatest community. There is nothing like our community of nations. The world has never known anything like our community of nations. We write symphonies. We pursue innovation. We celebrate our ancient heroes, embrace our timeless traditions and customs, and always seek to explore and discover brand new frontiers. We reward brilliance. We strive for excellence and cherish inspiring works of art that honor God. We treasure the rule of law and protect the right to free speech and free expression. We empower women as pillars of our society and of our success. We put faith and family, not government and bureaucracy, at the center of our lives, and we debate everything. We challenge everything. We seek to know everything so that we can better know ourselves. And above all, we value the dignity of every human life, protect the rights of every person, and share the hope of every soul to live in freedom. That is who we are. Those are the priceless ties that bind us together as nations, as allies, and as a civilization. What we have, what we inherited from our ancestors, And you know this better than anybody, and you see it today with this incredible group of people. What we've inherited from our ancestors has never existed to this extent before. And if we fail to preserve it, it will never, ever exist again. So we cannot fail. This great community of nations has something else in common. In every one of them, it is the people, not the powerful, who have always formed the foundation of freedom and the cornerstone of our defense. The people have been that foundation here in Poland, as they were right here in Warsaw. And they were the foundation from the very, very beginning in America. Our citizens did not win freedom together, did not survive horrors together, did not face down evil together, only to lose our freedom to a lack of pride and confidence in our values. We did not, and we will not, we will never back down. As long as we know our history, we will know how to build our future. Americans know that a strong alliance of free, sovereign, and independent nations is the best defense for our freedoms and for our interests. That is why my administration has demanded that all members of NATO finally meet their full and fair financial obligations. As a result of this insistence, billions of dollars more have begun to pour into NATO. In fact, people are shocked. But billions and billions of dollars more coming in from countries that, in my opinion, would not have been paying so quickly.
That is an achievement of the Trump administration, because I've given past shows on this. Countries that could easily meet its commitment aren't. And that includes Germany and France. Poland is one that does meet its commitments.
To those who would criticize our tough stance, I would point out that the United States has demonstrated, not merely with words, but with its actions, that we stand firmly behind Article 5, the mutual defense commitment.
Now, let me point out, during the campaign, he gave indications that we would pull out of NATO, especially if the other nations did not live up to their agreed-to minimum, not maximum, minimum of 2% in terms of their total economy. So now the money is coming in. Why? Because they rely on the United States. Other presidents could have insisted, and they didn't. It was President Trump that did. And now, lo and behold, the money is starting to come in because they want the protection of the United States. And Article 5 requires the United States to respond to attack against any of the NATO countries. So President Trump is definitely right in insisting upon this, especially right before the G20 summit in Germany, Hamburg, Germany, a nation that has fallen short.
Words are easy, but actions are what matters. And for its own protection, Europe, and you know this, everybody knows this, everybody has to know this, Europe must do more. Europe must demonstrate that it believes in its future by investing its money to secure that future. That is why we applaud Poland for its decision to move forward this week on acquiring from the United States the battle-tested Patriot air and missile defense system, the best anywhere in the world.
Now, that system originally was going to go into Poland, but our former president, Barack Obama, stopped it. The appeaser stopped it.
That is also why we salute the Polish people for being one of the NATO countries that has actually achieved the benchmark for investment in our common defense. Thank you, Poland. I must tell you, the example you set is truly magnificent, and we applaud Poland. Thank you. We have to remember that our defense is not just a commitment of money, it is a commitment of will. Because as the Polish experience reminds us, the defense of the West ultimately rests not only on means, but also on the will of its people to prevail and be successful and get what you have to have. The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it? We can have the largest economies and the most lethal weapons anywhere on earth. But if we do not have strong families and strong values, then we will be weak and we will not survive.
That's why faith, family, friends, and freedom truly matter.
If anyone forgets the critical importance of these things, let them come to one country that never has. Let them come to Poland. And let them come here to Warsaw and learn the story of the Warsaw Uprising. When they do, they should learn about Jerusalem Avenue. In August of 1944, Jerusalem Avenue was one of the main roads running east and west through the city, just as it is today. Control of that road was crucially important to both sides in the battle for Warsaw. The German military wanted it as their most direct route to move troops and to form a very strong front. And for the Polish Home Army, the ability to pass north and south across that street was critical to keep the center of the city and the uprising itself from being split apart and destroyed. Every night, the Poles put up sandbags amid machine gun fire, and it was horrendous fire, to protect a narrow passage across Jerusalem Avenue. Every day, the enemy forces knocked them down again and again and again. Then the Poles dug a trench. Finally, they built a barricade, and the brave Polish fighters began to flow across Jerusalem Avenue. That narrow passageway, just a few feet wide, was the fragile link that kept the uprising alive. Between its walls, a constant stream of citizens and freedom fighters made their perilous sprints. They ran across that street. They ran through that street. They ran under that street, all to defend the city. The far side was several yards away, recalled one young Polish woman named Greta. That mortality and that life was so important to her. In fact, she said, the mortally dangerous sector of the street was soaked in blood. It was the blood of messengers, liaison girls, and couriers. Nazi snipers shot at anybody who crossed. Anybody who crossed, they were being shot at. Their soldiers burned every building on the street, and they used the Poles as human shields for their tanks in their effort to capture Jerusalem Avenue. The enemy never ceased its relentless assault on that small outpost of civilization. And the Poles never ceased its defense. The Jerusalem Avenue passage required constant protection, repair, and reinforcement. But the will of its defenders did not waver, even in the face of death. And to the last days of the uprising, the fragile crossing never ever failed. It was never, ever forgotten. It was kept open by the Polish people. The memories of those who perished in the Warsaw Uprising cry out across the decades, and few are clearer than the memories of those who died to build and defend the Jerusalem Avenue crossing. Those heroes remind us that the West was saved with the blood of patriots, that each generation must rise up and play their part in its defense.
That's why it's important to know the history of your country, whether it's American history or Polish history. Because if you don't know your history, you don't really know your values and what's important, such as freedom.
And that every foot of ground and every last inch of civilization is worth defending with your life. Our own fight for the West does not begin on the battlefield. It begins with our minds, our wills, and our souls. Today, the ties that unite our civilization are no less vital and demand no less defense than that bare shred of land on which the hope of Poland once totally rested. Our freedom, our civilization, and our survival depend on these bonds of history, culture, and memory. And today as ever, Poland is in our heart, and its people are in that fight. Just as Poland could not be broken, I declare today for the world to hear that the West will never, ever be broken. Our values will prevail, our people will thrive, and our civilization will triumph. Thank you. So together, let us all fight like the Poles, for family, for freedom, for country, and for God. Thank you. God bless you. God bless the Polish people. God bless our allies. And God bless the United States of America. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you very much.
That was an historic speech. Will be remembered in Poland for a long time. And maybe in the United States, if our media would cover it. And that's the problem. They're trying to delegitimize the President of the United States because their chosen candidate didn't win. They can't accept the will of the American people that he won fair and square. Instead, they're undermining not only this president, but the values of our country. They will pay a price. More and more people simply won't read, listen, or pay attention to him. And I'm talking about the major networks, television networks, and newspapers that daily don't live up to the ideals of journalism, but instead broadcast progressive propaganda, largely lies, fake news. Now, I want to go to the second story because today, after meeting with the Polish president as well as presenting the speech, he flew to Hamburg, Germany, President Trump, and the world leaders are meeting in Hamburg, Germany. The key ones right now for the United States are South Korea and Japan because of the concern over North Korea and its launching of potentially an intercontinental ballistic missile that's still under development. And once they miniaturize their nuclear weapons, which they have, so in terms of weight and configuration can fit on a missile. And remember, where are they getting the money, the technology to do this? Oh, it's communist China. And they are coming to the G20 summit. I think President Trump will be meeting with representatives, the premier of China, to discuss what China is doing. I don't see anything it's doing. I'm sure there have been some discussions. But the money and a lot of the technology for doing what North Korea is doing comes from communist China, to a lesser extent Russia. And if that's the situation and they won't rein in North Korea, in other words, cease and desist your activities, then you force the United States and really the European Union, because we should be united in this, we should put an embargo on trade with China, and if they try to ship goods in, they won't get into the United States, and they shouldn't get into the European Union. And that will be an item on the agenda of discussions at the G20 summit. Remember, though, the focus in the past has been on economic concerns and policies. This time, to get China's attention and make sure it follows through and dismantles their nuclear program and missile program in North Korea, China will pay a very, very heavy price. And as I said yesterday, should this happen, there will be unrest in China. And that threatens directly the Communist Party rulers in China. So the stakes are high. But if North Korea persists, we will first try economic sanctions on Communist China. It doesn't work with North Korea. They're the worst totalitarian regime probably in the world, and that's saying a lot. And they produce nearly nothing. Their trade is really confined between Communist China and North Korea. And we also have a problem in the Middle East, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran, and it's paying North Korea to develop these weapons. And they pay in energy, oil and natural gas, as well as money. The threat is to the world, the West. We do not want nuclear proliferation where country after country, out of self-defense, develops and maintains nuclear weapons. Down that road lies folly. This is in the interest of the nations of the world to stop in its tracks both Iran and North Korea developing both the missile capability and the weapon capability, nuclear weapons, to threaten its neighbors. So this should be, and I believe will be, very high, if not the first, issue to be discussed at the G20. Trade is also a concern because the Chinese, while our largest trading partner, and I believe the same in terms of the European Union, I could be wrong there, they're producing a lot of goods that American citizens and European citizens, whatever their country, are consuming. Competition is good. But competition needs to be fair. Trade needs to be fair. And where you have a government intervening in the currency market, which Communist China until recently was doing, the trade was not fair because by intervening, you make the value of the yuan, which is the Chinese currency, low, and in turn, export prices of goods makes them cheaper. So other nations truly can't compete. So I'm sure currency manipulation, North Korea, will be items of discussion issues, if you will, that the United States will insist upon being discussed with the representatives primarily of Communist China. And they have a lot at stake. We no longer have a president that appeases and apologizes for the United States. He's gone. We have a new president that is achieving much in a short period of time and continues to do that, despite the best efforts of big lie media, your television networks, and your newspapers in New York City, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and other cities, to marginalize, demonize the current president with the objective of impeaching him when there's no, and I mean no, grounds for it. The radical left in this country has captured the Democratic Party as well as the media, and they're subverting this president. And the American people do not like what they see as well as hear. They will not stand for it. Now, in addition to trade in North Korea, another item of discussion will be the mass migration from Africa as well as the Middle East. That poses a serious security problem for the nations of Europe, just as the illegal alien invasion of the United States does. Because like in the United States, in Europe, you have advocates for open borders. And the reason is very simple. Just look at the populations of Germany, Italy, France. What will happen if there isn't mass migration? The populations of these nations will go down for the simple reason they're not replacing their numbers. They understand the problem, but the answer is not open borders. Let anyone in that wants to. You need to control your borders and control the numbers of immigrants to your country. Otherwise, you're inviting, and we've seen it, terrorist attacks across Europe, in the United Kingdom, in France, Spain, other countries. So I'm sure that terrorism and the threat of terrorism and how it relates to migration will also be on the agenda, because Chancellor Merkel, Angela, was a big advocate of open borders, and she's up for re-election. And the peoples of these countries are revolting against the elites. It's the elites in the United States and in the various European countries that are for this, together with the media. It's the people that are against it because they see the threat in terms of losing their jobs, their incomes, and want to stop to it. Now, I'm running out of time. I want to thank you for listening. There will not be a Friday show because I would willingly come in and do one, but the studio is closed. So the next show will be Monday, and I'll report on the outcome of the G20 summit and any other breaking news. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.